You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. The future of stem cell research, cash parole, and kidney dialysis clinics are now in the hands of California voters. And those are just three of the 12 propositions on the November ballot. To better understand what is at stake, I spoke to Fresno Bee opinion editor Tad Weber, Fresno State Professor of Political Science Tom Holyoke, and CAP Radio Health Science reporter Sammy Kaola.
I want to start with Proposition 14, the origins of which go back nearly two decades now to the debate over embryonic stem cell research. Sammy, you've been reporting on Prop 14 for CAP Radio. Walk us through how that past political war has brought us to this proposition today.
Sure. So this started back in 2004 when the state wanted to fund the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. And they wanted to do that because federal government research didn't allow embryonic stem cell research because of conflict over the pro-life debate. And it was just very difficult for scientists to get federal money to do this kind of work. And so the state decided that they would step in and backfill what the feds were not providing. And that was Prop 71 in 2004, and that issued $3 billion for stem cell research in California. And what's happening now is that $3 billion has sort of dried up. As of October 2019, there were only $132 billion left in that pot. And so CIRM, the state-funded stem cell organization that was created by that proposition, says we need a new funding source. We need to just renew what we had to be able to continue the research that we're very much in the middle of. And so they're now asking for $5.5 billion in bonds. And then, of course, there's interest on top of that to be able to continue the work. And this spans from Alzheimer's to Parkinson's to cancer, really dozens and dozens of diseases that benefit from stem cell research and specifically embryonic stem cell research.
And what's happening on a federal level around stem cell research today?
Right. So, you know, at the time that this money was allocated, there were tight restrictions on embryonic stem cell research. But then during Barack Obama's tenure, he lifted many of those and it was much easier and you were able to get federal money for a time. But now with President Trump in the White House, there are conversations about putting new limits on how much federal funding can be spent on embryonic stem cell research. So people who are for this proposition, Prop 14, they feel the tide is turning and the federal money is going to be unavailable very soon. And so we need to keep funding it on a state level. That's the for argument.
Tom Holyoke, maybe you could explain a little bit what the opposition is saying, which I understand includes one of the board members of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. Can you explain why?
Well, that particular case, that board member, I do not know. But in general, there's probably a few sources of opposition to this. Part of it is that this has been sort of caught up in the abortion debate and the status of embryos. And some do not feel that it is ethical to use embryos in any kind of research. At the same time, there's also opposition that regards the state issuing any kind of bonds. I mean, the state already has a pretty considerable debt from bonds that's issued in the past, and voters seem to be gradually getting less and less accepting of approving more and more bonds and thereby increasing state debt. So the opposition, as far as I'm aware, seems to come from those two sources.
I just wanted to talk about that board member that you mentioned. So I interviewed him. His name is Jeff Sheehy, and he is coming from that financial standpoint that was just mentioned. So he is on the board of CIRM, and he's very proud of the work that they have done over the years, but he basically thinks this is not the time for California to take on new debt, even for this kind of research. He thinks that the research can be done without it and that, you know, there's just other priorities we need to be investing in right now and not this, which is, you know, is surprising because he is on the board, but the rest of the board is in support. So just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Tad, you know, talking about this bond issue, the estimated costs of this initiative are, you know, just shy of $8 billion over the course of 30 years, which is a lot of money to take before voters, particularly at a time when California's budget is not in great shape. Now, some of the supporters of Prop 14 argue that this is an investment and point to royalties that the state has received as a result of prior medical breakthroughs. I mean, do you think that argument is going to fly at this moment of time with voters?
Thanks, Kathleen. I think that is going to be a hard argument to win with. I would note that we haven't yet taken a position on this, but several newspaper editorial boards in California have done so, and it's interesting how they break down. The Orange County Register and Bakersfield Californian, which are generally conservative-leaning, have come out against that. Probably no surprise there, given the cost of this ballot measure. But interestingly, the Mercury News in San Jose and the Los Angeles Times, who would be seen as more liberal-leaning, are also against it. And the Times points out in its editorial that this agency still needs to administer projects it's already gotten funded for. So the argument that they make is that it could use the time to discuss a more affordable path forward. And all summarizing these four newspapers' positions, they all are saying the state has more urgent spending priorities right now. So I think the cost figure is something that voters should look at very carefully.
And really quick, before we wrap up and move on to another topic, Sammy, can you just give us a sense of what has come from the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine? What kind of breakthroughs they have accomplished?
The CIRM says that they have advanced more than 90 clinical trials. They've completed nearly 3,000 studies, and they have backed two different cancer treatments that have been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And those range, you know, as I said, from Alzheimer's, HIV, cancer. And most recently, they did throw $5 million into COVID-19 research, and that's still ongoing.
Great. Well, I do want to move on to another proposition, one that I'm seeing a lot of ads for, and this is Prop 25, which would change how people get out of jail while awaiting trial. Tom, can you just explain what's at stake here?
This is the one that would essentially abolish the bail system, which is, you know, probably a lot of people have some familiarity with that. You know, people who are considered to be a potential, you know, flight risk and not come to trial are required to post, you know, bail as a condition for getting out of jail. That is, they have to put up, you know, an amount of money determined by a judge. And if they then show up, they usually get the money back. And the problem for an awful lot of people is that it's hard to get this money, especially if you're poor, especially if you come from a low-income community, especially, and that usually means a lot of people of color, and therefore it's considered discriminatory. And this proposal would actually simply clear the way for a state law that abolished bail a couple of years ago. This would clear the way for that law to go into effect.
So Tad Weber, opinion editor with the Fresno Bee, what is your take on Prop 25, given this moment of civic unrest around racial injustice that we're currently experiencing? Do you think that is going to help or hurt Proposition 25?
I would think that it would help the proposition get approved, because as Tom is pointing out, the cash bail system is hard on poor people. I mean, it creates real problems for those folks who cannot have the means to pay the bail and get out. Without being able to do that, they have to remain in custody. And, you know, I think the measure, on the one hand, of course, there's serious crimes that people need to be held accountable to, and we don't necessarily want serious criminals roaming around before their cases come before the court. On the other hand, this would apply to many more people who are charged with much lesser crimes and yet face that bail problem. So it's probably a good idea to let this measure pass and see how it works in practice. We have lots of years of history with the money bail system. Let's see what a different system in which judges are asked under the measure to assess the risk of the defendants. And let me hone in on that for a second. If a judge decides the defendant poses too much of a risk to be let out of jail until their case comes forward, they won't be let out. But probably in most of the cases, the judge would say, fine, we want you to report back on such and such a date, and the person will report back. Let's give it a shot. If it doesn't work out, we can always go back to the money bail system.
Tom Holyoke, political science professor at Fresno State, tell us a little bit more about this alternative system. You know, the ads in opposition to Prop 25 seem to be very skeptical of this algorithm. What do they mean by that?
Well, I think there's concern that this would allow people who maybe do have a tendency towards committing violent crimes to be let out. I mean, those who are opposing this are basing it on the notion that this would make it easier for violent criminals to be released into the public, and that's been a concern that's been on the minds of voters, especially in here in Fresno, where there does seem to have been some degree of an increase in violent crimes in the city.
But I find the opposition to Prop 25 interesting in the sense that it's sort of based around two separate arguments. So opposing the proposition, you have the Human Rights Watch and the NAACP, along with, you know, groups like the California Peace Officers Association and the California Bail Agents Association. Can you explain this sort of weird coalition of folks opposing Prop 25?
Well, I think some are afraid that the alternative system that would presumably be put in place might actually make it harder for individuals to be released, that the judge or whoever is going to be end up making the decision might be more inclined to simply keep people in jail under this new system. At least that's all I've been able to sort of discern from this.
And Tad, do you have a sense of where this is sitting with voters?
I think statewide, I haven't seen polling per se, but the coast is more liberal politically. It's blue over on the coast. And I think this would be something that coastal voters would support. The red part of the state is here in the valley, as well as the Inland Empire. And as Tom points out, there's probably going to be more skepticism toward this. So I guess it's really going to depend, as always, on turnout and which side gets to the ballot better.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Valley Edition. We are breaking down some of the propositions before voters in November with Tad Weber, Fresno Bee opinion editor, Tom Holyoke, professor of political science at Fresno State, and Sammy Kaola, healthcare reporter for CAP Radio. So, Sammy, I want to direct the next question to you, and I want to switch gears a bit and talk about another proposition that I'm seeing a lot of TV ads for, which is Prop 23. Now, this is about requirements for kidney dialysis clinics. And I will say, when I first started seeing ads around this proposition, my husband and I looked at each other and said, didn't we vote on this already? Sammy, you're covering this for CAP Radio. What's the backstory here?
This might feel familiar. You may remember in 2018, we saw Prop 8, which was very much the same players. So Prop 8 was sponsored by SEIU, which is a pretty major labor union in California. And it was targeted pretty much at two major dialysis companies that own the majority of clinics in California. They're DaVita and Fresenius. That prop failed. It would have dealt with the profit that these clinic operators were making. It would have capped how much they could profit, essentially. Now, it failed, and we have another one now, Prop 23, that doesn't have to do with capping profits. It has to do with regulations. So basically, it would put in place new requirements for these clinic operators. They would, for example, have to have a physician on site anytime a treatment is being given. They would have new reporting requirements in terms of infection rates. They'd have to report to the state and the federal government. And they would have to get approval from the state if they wanted to close a clinic. So those would all be just new things that they would have to do. But a lot of this has a backstory because these companies have historically been not friendly to the labor union. They haven't allowed them to unionize in the way they want to. And so, you'll see many of the editorials that have been written in opposition to this prop say this is just a ploy for this labor union to try to get leverage. This has to do with their labor battle and not a lot to do with patients.
So, Tom, I'll point the next question toward you. If there are some, as Sammy mentioned, some really powerful unions in favor of this proposition, but you have the opposition also dumping a lot of money into the campaign to defeat it. Who do you think is going to come out on top this time around?
Well, and to the extent that, you're certainly right about the money imbalance. In fact, I think those who are opposing it have actually, Lord, I just looked at the numbers. I guess the money raised against it is almost $100 million. And then for it is just a little over $6 million. So that's a huge imbalance, which means the opposition can really kind of, blanket the airways and getting their message out and, put all the mailers out there and really try to dominate the debate around this. So with that kind of a monetary imbalance, the no on Proposition 23 side really does seem to have an advantage here.
And Tad, has the Bee taken an opinion on this proposition?
We are going to be taking an opinion on this, and we'll be coming out in opposition to this measure. And it comes back to what Sammy was pointing to a minute ago. Our view is that this is an abuse of the initiative process, but this is really a special interest measure to benefit the union. Without question, as Tom is pointing out, these companies are profitable. They're putting in, as he points out, nearly $100 million into opposition, but this is their very business model at stake here. But another key point that we cannot lose sight of is that dialysis patients, when you're on dialysis, that is a life necessary process that you have to repeat at least two or three times a week, I believe. And the requirement to have an on-site physician, we ran an op-ed Valley Voice a couple months ago from a local person who is a kidney dialysis patient. And his point was that it's going to be difficult for every clinic to have a physician on site all the time when these patients need their dialysis treatments. So the fear of the patients is that clinics will close and leave them less options for getting their treatments. And I think that's a real possibility. So yes, the Bee is going to come out in opposition to this measure.
Kathleen, can
and
I just
Sammy, and you're... Oh, absolutely. Tom, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to expand what Tad said, because Tad's making a really good point that this, a lot of times these ballot initiatives have unintended consequences, and one of the unintended consequences of this one could very well be a reduction in the availability of dialysis services, because many of these clinics might not be able to survive if this goes through, it seems to me.
And Sammy, in your reporting on Prop 23, what are you hearing from dialysis patients?
I haven't talked directly to patients. I have heard from some clinics, particularly in rural areas, that requirement for a physician is a huge concern for them. They do feel they would be at risk of closing. I do believe there is an exception in the language of the prop that says if you truly cannot find a physician, that you can have a different kind of practitioner on site. And so that's something that's been brought up by the supporters of the prop to say, well, there will be workarounds. And, there was also a report from the Legislative Analyst Office that looked at what that might cost, to follow these new requirements. And they thought that for the most part, clinics wouldn't have to close, especially these larger networks of clinics, that they could find a way to sort of muscle through it and survive. But definitely for those smaller clinics, it is a concern.
Well, thank you all so much for taking the time to delve into these propositions. I definitely feel a bit more informed as I sit down with my ballot. So thank you so much. We've been talking to Tad Weber, Fresno Bee Opinion Editor, Thomas Holyoke, Professor of Political Science at Fresno State, and Sammy Kayola, Healthcare Reporter for CAP Radio. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.